Hello, is this Mr. Parker? Hi, this is Ka yeah, this is Catherine from the Bernstein Boston class at Harvard, and I'm here along with two other classmates, Stephanie Lai and also Karina Campbell, and we would like to talk to you about Henri Gebhardt. So,
And did you get my email saying you had permission?
yes, I did.
Okay.
That's great. Okay, why don't we start with asking you, how did you meet Henri Gebhardt? When did you study with him?
It was about 1943, I think. I had just
Okay.
come back from the Navy.
Okay.
And I don't quite remember. Oh, I know. I contacted somebody in a neighboring town and interviewed with her,
Okay.
and she was interested in having me study with her, but she happened to mention that she had studied with Heinrich Gebhardt, so I thought, why don't I go to the top? And so I did.
Oh,
And
that's nice.
that's how it came about.
And how old were you at the time?
Let's see, I must have been about 22,
Okay.
or 23.
Okay. So does Henri Gebhardt only teach younger students, or does he have
No,
students
no,
of all
no.
ages?
He had many adult students, many of them. Well, some of them at least played with the Boston Pops regularly, and
Okay.
he taught a lot of professional people.
Okay, that's great. Did he have a specific teaching style? What was
He
his
had
teaching style
studied with
like?
Leschetizky, and all of those people who studied with Leschetizky claimed that they had the Leschetizky method. And the Leschetizky method, I think, lasted for about the first two or three lessons.
Okay.
It was not like the Mathey system in London, which was more thoroughly worked out.
I see. So
I
who
may be wrong about that. There may have been more to it, but I don't remember him talking much more about it after the first few lessons.
Oh, so what did you say during the first few lessons about
Well, there was a
Leschetizky?
there was what was called a fundamental touch. And
Okay.
that was where you had five fingers on five keys, and you played them with a certain kind of roundness of tone, until you get that sort of evened out, and that was what it was. There was not much more to it than that. Courtauld, I studied with somebody later on who had studied with Courtauld, and Courtauld has an elaborate and very sort of almost scientific approach to things. He's got things really broken down. But the Leschetizky thing was sort of how do I say? Inspirational. That was what it was. It's sort of inspirational. Now, there may have been much more to it, but that's what I got from Gebhardt. And I had studied with somebody else who had studied with Leschetizky when I was in Cleveland. And he never talked much about the Leschetizky method.
Oh, who was he at Cleveland? Who was the
Yes.
teacher?
I beg your pardon?
Who was the teacher at
The
Cleveland?
man whose name was Riemann Schneider. He came from a very famous musical family. His brother, Carl, no, my teacher was Carl Riemann Schneider, and he had a brother, I've forgotten his first name, but he had, he was at Baldwin Wallace Conservatory, and he was a pretty famous person. He'd edited the Bach, books of Bach chorales and that sort of thing.
Okay, that's great. Was Gebhardt a strictly a classical pianist? Did he specialize teaching in any period of piano music, like classical,
Well,
Baroque,
of course, they're
Romantic?
heavily on Chopin.
Chopin,
Heavily
okay.
Chopin. And Rachmaninoff. I never did any Rachmaninoff with him. I did do some Chopin with him.
Okay. And was there a specific repertoire that he taught all students?
I don't remember that. Now, I remember that one of his students, when I was with him, played the Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto with the Boston Pops. And
Okay.
another one of his students played a Rachmaninoff concerto. I don't remember which one. It tended to be on the romantic side.
Romantic side. Okay. And what were the lessons typically like with Gebhardt?
Well, They were very, I would say, for one thing, very kindly.
Mm-hmm.
His personality was somewhat flowery.
Mm-hmm.
And he had made his, I think he came from the Alsatian section of France, which is half of the time it was Germany and then it was France, you know, back and forth at one uh-huh. of those border towns. And his aptitude for music was discovered at a very early age. How he happened to come to this country, I didn't know.
Okay.
I wish I'd been more curious about his background, if you know, when I was with him. He finally got quite a reputation, and he played with the, he went on tour with the Boston Symphony.
Okay.
And there's a composer by the name of Charles Martin Loeffler, Loeffler.
Okay.
And I think Loeffler lived next door to Gebhardt
uh-huh.
in Brookline.
Oh, okay.
At some point. And Charles Martin Loeffler was one of those composers who was a bit in the shadow of other composers. However, he flourished, and some of his things were played by the Boston Symphony. And one of them, it was either a concerto or some kind of orchestral work for piano. And I believe that Gebhardt went on nationwide tours with the orchestra playing this Loeffler piece.
Oh, that's great.
And they were great friends, you know, being next door and having the interest in music.
Okay. And you mentioned that Gebhardt had a flowery personality. Can you elaborate more on that?
Well, for instance, one of the songs he wrote was called Flower Phones, which was inspired by seeing a morning glories, you see. And there was nothing, it was nothing effeminate about it.
Uh-huh.
It was just that I think he tended to be more descriptive than specific.
I see. So he was more of a, did he talk more than demonstrate on the piano during his lessons?
He demonstrated quite a lot. Now, one of the early works I studied with him was a Mozart concerto, so I wouldn't say that he didn't do the classical repertoire. He knew the Beethoven and the Mozart concerti. We didn't. I don't think we did very much Bach. I had learned a partita or part of one on my own, and he may have helped me with more of it than I had learned.
Okay.
And I think that where he and Bernstein might have parted was that I don't think that Gebhardt had much patience with modern music beyond Debussy.
Oh, okay.
And I remember one time I played a piece by Virgil Thompson for him, and it was called Ragtime Bass. Do you know Virgil Thompson? He was a critic for the New York Times and also collaborated with Gertrude Stein,
mm-hmm.
and he was quite a big figure in music. In the 20s and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a set of 10 etudes, and the 10th one is called Ragtime Bass. I played it for one time for Gebhardt, and he sort of turned his nose up by that.
Oh.
And then I played another piece called Bumble Boogie, he was sort of embarrassed that I did it, you know.
I see.
But I was a kid, and I thought it was fun to do.
And do you know any more information about Gebhardt's relationship with Bernstein?
I don't. This is all that's in my mind, and again, is just a sort of crumb of memory that I think he was sorry that Bernstein didn't spend more time with him.
I
think that, I don't know whether it was a year, or even a year, or maybe 2 years,
uh-huh.
but Bernstein was already, you know, so... He has such a strong personality that I suspect that with his interest in popular music, it may have estranged them a bit.
Okay.
But I'm just guessing at that.
Okay. And
I can tell you one more thing that, right off the top of my head.
Oh, that'd be great.
As I was thinking about this possibility of talking, is that Gebhardt, I don't know quite how he managed to get the reputation he got,
mm-hmm.
Not that it wasn't justified, but he eventually became Amy Lowell's sort of court pianist,
mm-hmm.
and she gave elaborate dinner parties,
mm-hmm.
and there'd be a greyhound back of every guest chair, and before the dinner, there'd be some music, and he would play perhaps a Bach suite, and she would say, now, don't go on, play that one again, it was so charming, or you do it so beautifully, and so she would sort of manage the program as
okay.
a part. And do you know Amy Lowell?
No, we
she
don't.
She was president of Harlan's sister, Rob. I think it was Robert Lowell,
mm-hmm.
And she was quite an embarrassment to him because she was socially very advanced, and she used to take she was very rich, and she'd take these transatlantic trips, and she'd be out on the deck smoking cigars, you know. And so she was kind of, she was a bit of an embarrassment to him.
Okay.
She wrote a lot of poetry. For a while, she was considered America's leading woman poet.
I see.
Amy Lowell.
Amy Lowell, okay. And I just have a question about the student recitals. Did Gebhardt hold any of them? What were they like?
You mean student recitals?
Yeah, student recitals.
He sometimes opened his house and arranged for his students to give a recital, and they, you know, they put chairs around, and there was nothing. They're the kind of thing that any piano teacher might do, as I do myself, is arrange for my students to perform
mm-hmm.
either here at home or in various venues.
I see. Because I think I read somewhere that Gebhardt emphasized giving recitals as an integral part of the learning process.
Yeah, well, I think that's quite true, because a couple of times a year he would do this, and there was a chance for students to try their things out
mm-hmm.
and bring them to a kind of focus.
Okay, and I also have a specific question about his teaching style. Bernstein used the term finishing chord and pre-finishing chord. Did Gebhardt use those terms in his teachings?
I don't remember those terms.
Okay. I just have a question. When were you born?
1923.
Okay.
I'm very, very old.
Also, I was wondering if maybe you had any knowledge of Helen Coates, Helen Coates, who worked under Gebhardt for some time, I understand?
No, I don't.
Okay.
How do you spell the last name?
Coates.
No, I don't know that name doesn't come to me. The people I remember, there was a fellow by the name of Chester Fanning Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Who was a graduate of Harvard, and then I remember one of his people was Ethel Hutchinson. She was married to a dentist, and she was the one who played the Rachmaninoff concerto.
Okay.
And the other one was Hazel Hallett, and Hazel did a lot of playing around. I don't know whatever happened to Hazel.
Mm-hmm. Were they Gebhardt's assistants or students?
They were students of hers,
okay.
But then they all had, at least Ethel, I think, had a large following of piano students herself.
Okay. And do you know anything about the assistant's role in Gebhardt's studio?
The what?
The assistant's role in Gebhardt's studio.
I don't remember. Of course, the assistants, if they were called assistants, they all had their own place, and I don't remember ever talking in any detail with any of the
okay.
assistants.
Mr. Barker, I was just wondering, where were the lessons held? Did you go to his house?
He had a lodge home in Brookline, mm-hmm. and I went to his home there. He had taught for a while at the New England Conservatory, and when I went to the conservatory, I was a little bit reluctant to leave him, and so I think for a little while I studied with him and with the conservatory teacher, which is a very bad thing to do. And I think that I can't quite remember. He invited me to come back to play in one of his student recitals after I had gone to the conservatory. Uh-huh. And I played the ballade, Chopin's third ballade. And he said, he said something to the effect that I had lost something in it in the process. So.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was it hurt him a little bit that I had
left,
and yet that's what I had to do. And I remember one time, after I had left him maybe a year or so, he invited me to lunch at his house, and he had a lovely lunch prepared for me. And I think it was a little bit hoping that as I went on with my career, I would mention his name. And there was nothing implied in that, but nothing specific. But I always wondered why he did that, and I suspect that might be it.
Okay. So, what was the one thing that you learned from Gebhard? The most.
I think that probably the an inspirational approach as well. In other words, let your heart take over. In addition to reason, I think that he was more of an inspirational rather than an analytical person.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he could pull out passages from a Wagner opera or that sort of thing. So he was a very knowledgeable person.
Mm-hmm. And other questions? I think. And do you have any more stories about Gebhard lessons or performances? Anything you particularly remember?
I don't see how you could use it, but he did one time come to my home. I was living in a suburb north of Boston. And it was a Christmas party or something like that. And he very graciously, we asked if he'd play, and he did. He sat down and played, I think it's the second or third Chopin etude from the first book. And so he was a very accessible and kindly person.
Okay.
I think there was a somewhat of a withering of his clientele as he got older, which is apt to happen.
Uh-huh.
And I think the end, I think I heard, but again, I'm not sure. I think I heard that he went finally to live with his daughter in New Jersey, and it was, I think it was not a happy time. I think that perhaps she was not as gentle to her elderly father, but maybe she had reason. One never knows about things like that.
Okay.
I was not privy to that.
Okay. So you have students.
I didn't
seek it. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it.
Oh, okay. So you have students of your own right now? Is that correct?
Yes.
I see.
I do a lot of teaching, and I am always giving concerts.
Well, that's wonderful.
I think that's about it. I thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
And
I hope it's, I feel as though I just have crumbs and fringes of that is, but use whatever you can, and I'll be very interested to know the result when it's put together.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Bye.
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 That was good.
Interesting.